Hi, I'm Ed, a reader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 14th of April, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Hello, I'm Rob, and we start this edition of the Black Country Talking News with information regarding changes to lockdown restrictions.
The following information is step two of the government's roadmap to easing lockdown restrictions and comes into force no earlier than the 12th of April 2021, or at least 5 weeks after the end of step one. All non-essential retail can reopen. All personal care can reopen. Libraries and community centres can reopen. Most outdoor attractions can reopen. Indoor leisure, including gyms, can reopen for individual or household use only. Self-contained accommodation can reopen. All children's activities can resume. Outdoor hospitality can reopen. Indoor parents groups can resume for up to 15 people, excluding under fives. Funerals of up to 30 mourners can take place, weddings, wakes and receptions of up to 15 people can take place, event pilots will start, domestic overnight stays are permitted for your own household only, but no international holidays are permitted.
Thank you, Simon. Reading this week we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Angela and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a message from the NHS, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, and rounding all that off, another one of Graham Fisher's Tales from the Barn. But before we get to the news, long-time listeners Frederick and Audrey Anstey from Cannock have recently been celebrating their platinum wedding anniversary whilst we've been off the air. Their son Neil has been in contact with us to ask if we could share this news with our listeners. He writes, "Audrey Kirkham, 21, daughter of Wilfred and Florence from Cannock, married Frederick Anstey, 22, son of Sidney and Lily from Porth in the Rhondda Valley, on 26th of March 1951 at St Luke's Church in Cannock. Frederick had to obtain written permission to marry from his prospective father-in-law to give the vicar so that the banns could be read. Married life began inauspiciously, as they became separated in different carriages on a no-corridor train, taking them to their honeymoon destination of Rhyl. They rejoined each other on the journey only when the train stopped at Crewe. Frederick was in the Boys' Brigade and can still remember watching a Zeppelin airship flying over Cannock Chase. He enjoyed an adventurous lifestyle growing up in Huntingdon, which would certainly not comply with today's health and safety demands. Audrey enjoyed taking music and dancing lessons, going to the local picture house where she insisted in sitting in the more expensive balcony front row seats. Growing up, she took great pleasure in eavesdropping on her elder sister Hazel when she had a new boyfriend. Frederick's own father commented that he was marrying above his station, whilst Audrey's parents merely wanted their youngest daughter to be looked after. Audrey trained as a comptometer operator and worked for both the gas board and the coal board. Frederick worked in the building industry, including with H. Fidler in Monmouth Green, and later with Staffordshire County Council. They both enjoyed visiting theatres in Wolverhampton, Dudley and Birmingham, and can recall watching Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Max Miller, Frankie Lane, Guy Mitchell, B. Billy Daniels, and many other great artists. Family holidays were taken in Brixham, Paignton, and later in Newquay in West Wales. Retirement allowed them to venture much farther afield, with family holidays throughout the UK and Ireland, generally being based around attending horse racing meetings. Further travel took them across Europe and to Canada, Australia, and longer stays in New Zealand. Audrey and Frederick celebrated their platinum wedding anniversary in their Cannock home they have shared for the past 58 years alongside their only son, Neil. To mark this special occasion, a fish and chip supper was accompanied with a bottle of champagne sitting alongside a celebratory card from Her Majesty the Queen. It's safe to say they have both looked after each other and happily intend on continuing to do so. Thanks for getting in contact, Neil, and congratulations to Frederick and Audrey. Now we have our local news. But despite Ed, Angela, Liz, and starting us off, it's Christine.
Nearly 140,000 life-saving COVID-19 jabs have now been given in Wolverhampton, with increasing numbers of people receiving their second dose. Latest figures show a total of 138,423 vaccinations have been delivered in the city so far, with 117,044 people having received the first of their two doses and 21,379 patients having had both. People who are eligible but have not yet had their first jab are asked to do so as a matter of urgency as more people who have had their first dose begin to receive their second. First doses of vaccinations are still available to anyone aged 50 and over, anyone who is clinically extremely vulnerable, frontline health and social care workers, and people who are in receipt of carer's allowance or are the main carer of an elderly or disabled person whose welfare may be at risk if their carer falls ill. John Denley, Wolverhampton's Director of Public Health, said, "The vaccine is the best protection we have against coronavirus, and more people across the city are now having their second dose. This is important as it acts as a booster, enhancing immunity and offering longer lasting protection against infection. It's likely that the easing of restrictions as we leave the COVID-19 lockdown will lead to an increase of infection rates. So now, more than ever, is the time to get your jab if you're eligible and haven't had it yet." For more information about the vaccine, including the answers to frequently asked questions, you can visit www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/vaccine or www.nhs.uk/COVID-vaccination. People will need to register with the GP surgery in England in order to receive the vaccine. For more details, please visit www.nhs.uk/NHS-services/GPS. Anyone with symptoms of COVID-19, which include a fever, a new continuous cough, or a change to the sense of taste or smell, must immediately self-isolate and book a PCR test by visiting www.gov.uk/get-coronavirus-test or calling 119.
Nearly 1,000 businesses across Dudley Borough have been praised after successfully meeting COVID secure guidelines to help prevent outbreaks of the virus. In recent months, Dudley Council's COVID business advisors have visited hundreds of businesses across the borough. 956 businesses had a successful first visit and were awarded COVID secure posters to display in their premises. To avoid outbreaks within the workplace, businesses should follow a number of actions, including encouraging staff to socially distance when on breaks and outside the premises, pay extra attention to cleaning areas that are shared, such as photocopiers, lift buttons and telephones, and improve ventilation. They should also let staff work from home wherever possible and hold meetings online. Proactively identifying close contacts of positive cases within the workplace, make sure employees follow self-isolation guidelines and include agency staff in COVID risk assessments, communications and contact tracing. Businesses across the borough are also being encouraged to send their employees for lateral flow tests twice a week to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Karen Wright, Director of Public Health at Dudley Council, said businesses have an important part to play in helping track the virus and to prevent outbreaks occurring. We know it's not possible for all businesses to allow staff to work from home, and this is why they must have all the necessary steps in place to protect their workforce and the wider community. We're really pleased that so many businesses are already doing their bit, and I thank them all.
Health chiefs across the Black Country and West Birmingham are urging Muslims not to delay having their COVID-19 vaccine, first or second dose, during the holy month of Ramadan, which started on the evening of Monday 12th of April 2021. The COVID-19 pandemic has hit local communities hard and with tragic consequences. The safest and most effective way to protect yourself, your family, and those most at risk from the virus is by having a vaccine when you're offered it by the NHS. To reassure the Muslim community, the British Islamic Medical Association has reviewed the analysis of Islamic scholars and confirmed that having the vaccine does not invalidate the fast. In addition, the vaccine is halal and does not contain pork or other animal, fetal or alcohol products. This reflects in the advice of the majority of Islamic scholars that it is permissible. Dr. Masood Ahmed, Chief Medical Officer of Black Country and West Birmingham CCG and a Muslim, said, "As Muslims, we have a duty to preserve life, and getting vaccinated is the most effective way to prevent illness and loss of life from COVID-19. A lot of hard work has gone into bringing the vaccines to our local communities to protect our most vulnerable, and we have already vaccinated thousands of people across the Black Country and West Birmingham. We must now stand together and not allow this progress to slow down during Ramadan. Islamic scholars have made it clear that having the vaccine does not invalidate the fast. However, if you're still unsure whether you should have the vaccine during the holy month, please speak to your local imam for guidance. I urge everyone to have the jab when offered, and please continue to follow government guidelines to reduce transmission and help save lives."
A rallying cry has been made for shoppers to support local businesses that are reopening, with one MP declaring, "Use it or lose it." Pubs, restaurants, gyms, hairdressers and non-essential shops are among the businesses allowed to reopen this week, in a major step in easing lockdown measures. People in the Black Country were urged to shop locally and help boost the regional economy. The head of the Black Country's Chamber of Commerce echoed those calls, saying some businesses have not survived the pandemic. Councils have been busy preparing for today, with public health signage installed in town centres, one-way walking systems in place, and hand sanitizer available. The Robin Hood and Willenhall are amongst the pubs opening up their beer gardens this week. Jane Murphy and her daughter Alex only took over the pub at the beginning of March. Mrs. Murphy said the last few months have been very difficult, but she was excited to begin a new chapter at the pub. She said, "It's been a long time coming and we're going to give people that extra special feeling of excitement at being out and seeing other people. It's not exactly like mixing inside a pub, but it will feel a lot like my pub is my back garden. And we still want to see people smiling and enjoying themselves. As long as people stick to the rules, because we don't want to go backwards, then we can all go forwards and get back to normal soon." Marco Longhi, the MP for Dudley North, said, "My rallying cry is to use it or lose it. The government has done everything it possibly can to bridge the difficult period whilst businesses had to close. Now that businesses are allowed to reopen, it is absolutely paramount people regain that confidence to go out and spend their pennies and pounds as locally as they possibly can."
Efforts to find a tip for thousands of Black Country residents to use have hit a brick wall after Dudley and Sandwell councils failed to reach an agreement. Residents in Dudley were told last week they can no longer use the tip they have used for years just across the border in Bilston after a financial row broke out between Dudley Council and Wolverhampton Council. While plans to have access to an alternative tip in Shidas Lane, Oldbury, have also come to nothing after talks with Sandwell Council broke down. It means just one site in Birmingham Street, Stourbridge, is the only one available to serve the whole of Dudley Borough. Sandwell Council confirmed on Wednesday that it will not be allowing people from outside the borough to use the waste centre in Oldbury. A spokesman for the authority said, "We're unable to open up our facilities for use by people from outside the borough. We only have one recycling centre in Sandwell and we need to ensure that it is available for Sandwell residents to use. A war of words broke out between the leaders of Labour-led Wolverhampton Council and Conservative-led Dudley Council after the deal between the two authorities broke down last week. For the last 12 years, Dudley residents have been able to dispose of their rubbish at Dudley Council's Stourbridge tip and at Wolverhampton Council's Bilston tip. Wolverhampton Council had asked Dudley Council to pay around £133,000 more than the £200,000 a year it had been paying for access since 2008-09. Wolverhampton Council defended the increase, saying it was only right that Dudley paid its fair share of the £1 million a year running costs, given that 32% of visitors are from Dudley. However, Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley described the proposed increase as an utter disgrace and accused Wolverhampton Council of a back of a fag packet accounting. Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield questioned why Wolverhampton should pick up Dudley's bill, adding, "We are more than happy if Dudley Council wants to come back to the table and pay their fair share."
A health boss has moved to reassure residents that a change in how healthcare is organised in the Black Country will not mean the closure of a GP surgery. Moss Grove Surgery in Kinver was transferred to Dudley Clinical Commissioning Group in April last year. However, the Dudley CCG has now merged with its Walsall, Wolverhampton and Sandwell and West Birmingham equivalents to form the Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group. Members of South Staffordshire Council have raised concerns that residents using health facilities run by organisations across the border in Dudley may fall through the gaps when it comes to accessing care services run by organisations in their home county. And there were also fears for the future of the Kinver surgery at a meeting of the Council's Wellbeing Select Committee meeting. Councillor Lynn Hingley, who represents Kinver, said, "People are worried that eventually Kinver may close, like Pattingham did. That's a big worry to people. They keep asking me." Neil Buckton, Dudley Managing Director for Black Country and West Birmingham's CCGs, responded, "No, that's not the case whatsoever." The meeting was told there had been no real changes to the way services had been provided to Kinver residents since April 2020, despite the recent CCG merger. Patients of the Kinver practice needing hospital services can use those provided by Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Russell's Hall Hospital, as well as Royal Wolverhampton's NHS Trust, which runs New Cross and Cannock Chase Hospitals.
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. I hope you're all keeping well. And for those of you who mark it, I hope you've had a wonderful Easter. I have four children at home, so you can imagine how much chocolate we still have to get through. I think we'll still be going in 2022. It's wonderful to be able to catch up with you all again. As usual, it's been a really busy couple of weeks here at Beacon. First up, we want to tell you about an amazing donation we've recently received to support people with sight loss like you. It's come from the incredible team behind the JW Hunt Cup. The Cup is a charity football competition created in 1926 to help raise funds solely for Beacon, and it's raised an awe-inspiring £369,000 since it first began. Players are yet to kick off this season, but organisers have still managed to raise a remarkable £4,000 to support people with sight loss during a recent raffle. The fact that a worldwide pandemic hasn't stopped them from fundraising is incredible. We're so grateful for their support. Now, what would you do with £1,000? You could give your home a revamp, get a new set of wheels, or even take a holiday. That's when we're allowed to again. £1,000 can make a real difference for many of us. And if you sign up to the Wolves Lottery, you'll be in with a chance of winning that every week. You'll also be supporting people with sight loss with a donation of 65 pence from every £1 played made to the Beacon Centre. It costs just £1 a week to enter, and you can find out more on our website, beaconvision.org/support-us/wolves-lottery. As lockdown restrictions begin to ease, many of you may be thinking about the future. particularly if you want to make a change of career or just think about what's next. We want you to know that we get it. Taking that step to get back into work, change jobs, or start improving your skills is a big deal. But whatever your situation, our expert advisors are here to help. If you live in the Black Country or Staffordshire and want tailored employment or skills support, get in touch. Call 01902 880 111 Mondays to Fridays. The Bridges Project and the Evolve Project are funded by the European Social Fund and the National Lottery Community Fund. Finally this week, have you heard about our free telephone befriending service? We're incredibly proud that in a recent survey of participants in our telephone scheme, 100% of people we asked said it improved their physical or emotional well-being. If regular chats with a trained and DBS check volunteer can make a difference for you or someone you know, then get in touch. Again, the number's 01902 880111, Monday to Fridays. You can also email us on inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's it for this week. Take care, and I'll be back to catch up with you again soon.
Cheers, Helen. Thanks for that. Coming up next, we have some more local news.
West Midlands Police Headquarters could face closure under plans for a review of the force's controversial estates programme. Jay Singh Sohal, the Conservative candidate for Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, says if elected next month, he will look closely at the viability of Lloyd House in Birmingham. He suggested the site may be surplus to requirements with the new integrated control suite due to open in Aston later this year, and vowed to shift focus to increasing police presence in areas away from Birmingham city centre. The estates programme has seen around half of the region's police stations and bases shut down since 2012, with 22 going in the Black Country. Tory MPs say the scheme has reduced the police presence in communities and made the public feel less safe, while Labour PCC David Jamieson says he has prioritised officer numbers ahead of empty buildings. Mr Singh Sohal questioned whether the estates programme had benefited residents outside Birmingham. Mr Jamieson said he was surprised at the plans for Lloyd House. This will further hamper policing across the West Midlands after a decade of cuts, he said. He said crime fighting had been seriously undermined by government cuts to his budget, and added the Chief Constable's plans retain smaller local bases for officers to save £5 million a year, protecting 100 officer posts. Police need modern facilities with the latest technology, but ultimately, officers, not empty buildings, catch criminals.
The Merrihill Shopping Centre will announce a raft of new store openings following the reopening of non-essential shops. Alongside major chains including Next, Primark and H&M, Merrihill's independent stores, including T.H. Baker, All Good Things and The Little Dessert Shop, will also reopen their doors. For the first time since COVID-19 restrictions were introduced, shoppers will now also be able to try on their fashion items in store, with changing rooms permitted to be open alongside new safety measures. The centre's restaurants, including Five Guys, Nando's and the Indian Tavern, that have offered takeaway or delivery services, will continue to do so. Merrihill's other bars and restaurants continue to prepare for reopening dine-in facilities later in the spring. Merrihill will be announcing the arrival of new brands, including retail stores and food and drink options, with more information on exact dates and stores due to follow later in April. Steve Hargreaves, operations manager at Merrihill, said, "We cannot wait to reopen the centre next week, and we know many of our visitors are looking forward to planning their first shopping trip back at Merrihill. As stores begin to reopen their doors next week, we want to reassure our local community that we will continue to do everything we can to make sure the centre is a safe place to visit and work. We'd also like to thank our hard-working teams and everyone else for their ongoing support in following the latest guidance."
Markets in Wolverhampton have this week begun the process of welcoming back non-essential traders. The return of non-essential traders to Bilston, Wensfield and Wolverhampton city centre markets is part of the next steps of the government's plans to ease lockdown. COVID secure measures are now in place for visitors to the markets, including social distancing to ensure the safety of staff, traders and members of the public. Other safety measures include a separate entrance and exit, a guided one-way system, maximum capacity and extra security. Visitors will also be asked to wear face coverings while shopping. Wensfield Market fully reopened Monday, whilst Bilston and the City Centre Market will see a phased return of non-essential traders. Ross Cook, Wolverhampton Council's Director for City Environment, said, "It's good news that we can safely start operating markets with non-essential traders again in Wolverhampton. We know that they have been missed and hope that everyone will follow the measures that have been put in place for them to be fully open. We have been working closely with traders to ensure they have the correct measures in place to operate safely."
Free parking will remain in Dudley Council-owned car parking in a bid to boost footfall for traders. Council chiefs in Dudley said parking charges would remain suspended until at least the end of the month to assist business owners looking to bounce back from lockdown. From Monday, some businesses have been able to reopen under Step 2 of the government's roadmap to ease restrictions imposed to control the spread of coronavirus. Balvinder Heron, Deputy Chief Executive at Dudley Council, said, "We are committed as a council to doing all we can to help borough businesses to bounce back from months of not being able to trade during lockdown. To that end, we have decided to keep free parking in place until the end of April at least, to hopefully boost footfall in our town centres in the critical first few weeks of reopening for many shops. We will keep the position under review. We know that our residents are looking forward to returning to our town centres and high streets and that our businesses can't wait to welcome them back. However, we still need to adhere to the restrictions and enjoy our town centres safely. I would urge businesses to make sure they are COVID safe and for residents visiting shops to continue to follow the guidelines and hands, space, face."
Visitors to a fun fair at Wolverhampton's West Park have been warned that they will be asked to leave if they ignore social distancing rules. The Harry Jones Company's fun fair arrived at the city's park on Monday and will run until the 9th of May. It comes as coronavirus restrictions were lifted on Monday, including the opening of outdoor attractions such as zoos, fun fairs, fairgrounds and theme parks. The Harry Jones Company is an experienced provider of fun fairs, which has previously organised the Wolverhampton Fiesta in West Park, which was last held in June 2019, but this is the first time the fun fair has returned to the park since the COVID pandemic. The arrival of the fair comes for the final week of the Easter school holidays and coincides with the opening up of other permanent fun parks like Drayton Manor and Alton Towers. Wolverhampton Council said the organisers had put control measures in place, including a strict cleaning regime, and that anyone who fails to stick to social distancing will be asked to leave. The fair will be inspected, and if there are any concerns that agreed measures are not being stuck to, the event will be cancelled. However, people living on roads around West Park have expressed concerns on social media over crowds descending on the area.
We have two more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How high is the Burj Khalifa? Question 2. Which country does the word broccoli come from? Question 3. What were bowler hats invented as? Question 4. Which animal is considered to be bulletproof? Question 5. How many teeth do sea urchins have? And question 6. How big is a baby octopus when it's born? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Coming up next, we have some more local news, brought to us by Christine, Ed, Angela, and first up, it's Liz.
A row has erupted over the use of a community centre, with a woodworking group set to be replaced by a new pupil referral unit. Dudley Council has told Senior Citizens Enterprise Woodwork Group to leave the premises of Applied Learning Centre in Meadow Road, Dudley, where it has been based for 10 years. There are plans for Priory Boxing Club to take over the site and launch a pupil referral unit, a specialist school for children who aren't able to attend mainstream schools. Mike Smith, chairman of the Woodwork Group, claims the deal was made without their knowledge, leaving members feeling cross. He said, "We know they have been getting their heads together and it has been going on for quite a bit. We had a letter come in saying, you have got to be out by April the 7th. I phoned up the person who is in charge of the building and they said that that is what they have told me to do. They have told me you have got to get out. We do feel betrayed. More than anything, what gets me most is the way they have treated us. To say they are supposed to be responsible counsellors who look after people in the community, they haven't." In response to the story, Kevin O'Keefe, Chief Executive of Dudley Council, said, "Last year, the council was asked about the availability of the former Meadow Road Learning Centre to create a new community school for children at risk of exclusion from mainstream school. This was supported by Children's Services. Initially, the woodworking group, which has used the former learning centre's workshop for free, was advised by the proposed school it could remain. However, unfortunately, they later decided that the woodworking group couldn't be accommodated and asked the council to relocate the group. Unfortunately, due to the type of equipment used and the need for specific requirements, such as mechanical dust ventilation, it has not been possible to identify an immediately available alternative. The council is working with the group in seeking alternative accommodation and has offered to help the group with removal and temporary storage of its equipment. But regrettably for the group, the timeline the proposed school are working to necessitates their relocation as soon as possible."
Controversial plans to build two crematoriums on the outskirts of Wolverhampton have been given the green light by the Secretary of State. Plans for the sites in Broad Lane, Essington and Holyhead Road in Wergs have been in the pipeline for years, but a string of legal challenges have forced proposals to be put on hold. A week-long public inquiry at South Staffordshire Council took place in January 2019 to determine if either of the planning proposals should be given the go-ahead. But it was announced last Thursday that they have both been allowed on appeal. The Secretary of State determined the appeals following the quashing of a previous appeal relating to both crematorium plans. In both cases, the harm to the Green Belt was outweighed by the need for the new facilities, with the Minister concluding that there is an overall shortage of facilities across the West Midlands conurbation, which is only likely to get worse.
A former owner of a Black Country butcher's has admitted 8 food hygiene offences. Asif Riaz, previous owner of Madni Halal Meats in High Street, Lye, appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court on March the 22nd. It came after environmental health officers from Dudley Council carried out a routine food hygiene inspection in May 2019, where poor standards were discovered and the premises was rated as a zero in the food hygiene scheme. The court heard that cleaning standards were poor. The floor surface in the food room was damaged and unclean. There was no soap provided at the wash basin for washing hands, and the door to the rear yard was left open, allowing flies access into the premises. Cardboard and other refuse was not stored suitably, and raw meat was stored in a way that presented a risk of contamination to ready-to-eat food. The food safety management system was incomplete and Riaz failed to notify the authority that there had been a change in ownership. Riaz was sentenced to 4 weeks imprisonment for each of the offences, which has been suspended for 12 months. He was also ordered to undertake 100 hours community service and pay £2,000 towards costs. Dudley Council confirmed that there now has been a change in ownership of the food business and that Riaz was no longer the proprietor.
Wolverhampton Homes, a social housing provider which manages homes on behalf of the City Council, has given the green light for City Fibre to bring next-generation digital infrastructure within reach of its portfolio of more than 22,000 homes. Thanks to a blanket way-leave agreement with the council, City Fibre will connect all properties managed by Wolverhampton Homes to the new full fibre network in its buildings across the city. This agreement will ensure the rollout can progress smoothly, while making it possible for 22,700 customers to enjoy faster, more reliable, full fibre-enabled broadband services. Full fibre will ensure households can utilise the latest smart home technology, stream entertainment across multiple devices, and make it easier to work from home with virtually no buffering or lagging. Sanjay Sudra, City Fibre's strategic Wayleave manager, said, "Digital access is a major issue facing communities across the UK, and we are committed to addressing this problem. The COVID-19 pandemic has shown more than ever just how vital a fit-for-purpose connection is for work, play, and keeping in touch. The agreement we have reached with Wolverhampton Homes will make a genuine difference to thousands of people living in properties across the city, and we look forward to seeing tenants take advantage of the benefits full fibre will bring." Sean Aldis, Chief Executive of Wolverhampton Homes, added, "We want to help make Wolverhampton an even better place to live and provide great homes and neighbourhoods where our customers can access training, skills and job opportunities. City Fibre's full fibre network will be vital in ensuring Wolverhampton has a resilient and dynamic economy for decades to come, and the Council's blanket Wayleave agreement will ensure our customers can enjoy the fastest and most reliable digital connectivity from the comfort of their homes."
Delivery drivers from Wolverhampton joined coordinated strikes across the country against Deliveroo in the latest campaign by workers in the gig economy. Strike organisers, the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain, IWGB, said hundreds had attended socially distanced protests in Wolverhampton, London, York, Reading and Sheffield. 10 people from across Wolverhampton took part in the protest at St Peter's Square, opposite Wolverhampton Civic Centre, with others coming to show their support. The protesters included Deliveroo and Uber Eats workers. Bakitar Boparao was one of the participants, and the 37-year-old from Penn said he was taking part to protest against what he called exploitation by delivery companies. He said, "We're not even getting paid national minimum wage, working 8 hours a day and earning around £40, which is barely £4 an hour. We also don't get holiday or sickness pay, and we feel like we're working long hours for peanuts, which is not feasible for the cost of living. That's why we're here today, to let the public know about the companies they're buying from and raise awareness of the issues we're currently having. It's great to be part of a national movement, as we are all one unit up and down the UK, working to get better living conditions for all the delivery workers." Deliveroo disputed the union's claims, saying only a tiny minority of workers took action, and adding it was launching a consultation with riders about how to invest a new £50 million community fund.
Up next is a message from the NHS concerning the COVID-19 vaccination programme.
Dear mums and dads,
grandparents, aunties,
uncles,
brothers,
sisters,
nephews,
nieces,
sons,
daughters,
cousins, we love you.
We know we don't say it often enough, and sometimes we have our disagreements like families do.
But wherever you are, we love you from the bottom of our hearts, and we know you love us.
And we want to see you again. COVID-19 has kept us apart for way too long.
We want to hug you. We want to celebrate with you. We want to worship with you. We want to play video games with you, preferably in the same room, so that we can see the look on your face when we beat you.
But in order to do all that, we all need to take the COVID-19 jab. So all of us in this together.
Things will slowly get back to normal. Well, what they're calling the new normal. But in reality, the new normal will mean needing a vaccine for doing the kinds of things we used to take for granted.
Because we love you, we want you to be safe. We don't want you to be left out or left behind.
While other communities are rushing to get the vaccine and millions have already been vaccinated, some Black people in our community are being more cautious.
You have legitimate worries and concerns, and we hear that. We know change needs to happen and that it's hard to trust some institutions and authorities.
But we're asking you to trust the facts about the vaccine from our own professors, scientists, and doctors involved in the vaccine's development. GPs not just from here in the UK, but from all over the world, including Africa and the Caribbean.
Many of whom are our relatives. Many of whom have made the ultimate sacrifice to protect the people of this country from this pandemic. And the thousands who volunteered to be part of vaccine trials so that we know it's safe and works for people of all ethnicities.
Don't let their sacrifice be in vain. Don't let your concerns be the thing that widens racial inequality in our society. Don't let coronavirus cost even more Black lives. Because we matter.
We love you. We don't want you to get sick.
We don't want you to die.
So please, hear us.
And when your turn comes, take the jab. Let's do this together.
And once you do, tell Cousin Mo to do the same thing. Is he really my cousin?
Now we return to some more local news, and starting us off, it's Ed.
Debenhams is to briefly reopen 97 of its stores in a final fire sale before shutting for good. Its branches at the Maryhill and Telford shopping centres are among those that will reopen, along with its store in Lichfield. The department store is attempting to sell as much of its stock off as possible before shutting for good in May. Discounts of up to 70% will be available to clear remaining stock before all close permanently on the 15th of May, when the brand disappears from UK's high street after more than 200 years of trading. The business, which collapsed last year, is timing its reopening with the lifting of COVID restrictions on non-essential retail. Its stores will begin to close for the last time on the 2nd of May.
Dudley's Canal Caves will continue to be explored after a lifeline grant was given to the trust that runs the attraction. The Dudley Canal and Tunnel Trust received £154,900 in funding from the government's Culture Recovery Fund for Heritage. Trust Chief Executive Tracy Dix Williams said news of the funding had been met with relief and excitement and spoke about what would be done with the funding. She said, "It helps protect jobs, develop our business with some new offers, and lets us pay our bills and put in place recommendations made by the consultants we've worked with. As we cannot go into the caverns until May, due to them being classed as an indoor venue, we have launched a new explorer boat. It means people can blow off the cobwebs of lockdown and get out and explore what has changed in the area and along the canals." Mrs. Dix Williams said the relief at gaining the funding was due to concerns about what could have been lost if the centre had been unable to reopen. She said, "We only opened for 15 weeks in 2020, and we were aware that this was just not sustainable. We have been worried for the continuation of the heritage we are guardians for, as if we are not here, how will the unique caverns, mines and tunnels continue to be preserved and accessible for the public? Everything is in place and we just need visitors who are confident to come out and who want to support attractions and businesses such as ours."
West Midlands Police has welcomed a new furry recruit who will play a different role to the traditional police dog. The 8-week-old Malty Poo is the force's first ever well-being dog. Malty Poos are a fairly new breed with a small stature, rounded head and floppy ears, and they carry the appearance of a puppy for nearly their entire lives. The little puppy joined her new owner this week, but is yet to be given a name, and West Midlands Police is appealing for people in the region to help. Inspector Paul Van Veen from the Dudley Partnerships team came up with the proposal for the four-legged new recruit after seeing how well it worked in our forces that have already realised the benefits of time spent with a furry companion. The pup's handler, a trained mental health first aider, will bring the pup into school settings to help the police connect better with the children. The pup will also be on hand to provide emotional support following difficult or traumatic incidents. As the newest member of the partnerships team, her role will be to support the well-being of our community, with her first deployments focused on helping vulnerable people as lockdown restrictions are lifted. A spokesman for the force said, "As the first ever West Midlands Police therapy dog, it's important to us that she has a meaningful name, and we want you to help to decide what that name should be. Let us know what you would like her to be named and why. You can submit your entry in the comments section on Facebook or send an email to dy_partnerships_team@west-midlands.pnn.police.uk. We will choose our favourite four and put it to a public vote as soon as possible.
One of the world's most dangerous bird species has returned to Dudley Zoo and Castle after a 14-year absence. A 10-year-old male southern cassowary has arrived from Paignton Zoo and has moved into a newly designed exhibit at the Castle Hill attraction. The Australian native flightless bird is considered as one of the closest living relatives to dinosaurs, but keepers say its long talons, a helmeted head plate, and powerful legs make it a force to be reckoned with. Section leader Nicola Wright said, "The bird department are delighted to welcome back this species after more than a decade. He is a stunning individual and is settling in well. Now it's just a case of getting to know his personality and watching him settle into his new habitat. We can't wait for our visitors to come and see our very own dinosaur. Our other recent new arrivals at the zoo include a female giant anteater and lots of spring babies, including a camel, ring-tailed lemur, spider monkey, galada, and Barbary sheep." Dudley Zoo and Castle has now reopened to visitors after the easing of lockdown restrictions on Monday. Tickets are now available by visiting the zoo's website.
Wolves manager Nuno Espirito Santo has found himself in the frame after teacher Stuart Mayer captured his likeness on canvas. Now the artwork, which gained top marks from Stuart's students at Smestow School in Castlecroft, has gone into an online raffle to raise money for the Wolves Foundation's Feed Our Pack project. Nuno has given his approval and added his signature, which is expected to boost donations. He said, "Families and children have been made more vulnerable because of the pandemic, and we have to help them. We have to give them hope for the future." The Wolves charity aims to help reduce the effects of food poverty and support residents of Wolverhampton who have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Stuart, aged 45, said that he had painted the portrait of Wolves legend with the intention of not only inspiring his students and honouring his hero, but also to help the local community through the charity. He said, "During lockdown, Premiership football and art have been two interests that have given my students and myself a lot of joy. As a lifelong Wolves supporter, I wanted to give back not only to my team, but also the local community." He is hoping the painting, which measures about 3 feet 6 inches square, will eventually go on public display.
Now it's time to hear from Flashback Roger, who has for us some more amazing facts.
Hello, it's Roger again with a new Did You Know spot. It's the first of our official summer, and of course the return after Easter, which I hope you enjoyed and that you didn't pig out too much on chocolate. So here goes anyway, with a fresh batch of fascinating items for your delight. The Burj Khalifa in Dubai is so tall you can see two sunsets from it in one day. At 2,722 feet high, it's the tallest building in the world and stands almost half a mile tall. So tall, in fact, that you can see the sunset happen at ground level, and then if you get the elevator all the way up to the top of the building, you can see it again from the top. Broccoli is a man-made food. Us humans didn't just engineer broccoli out of nowhere. Our broccoli only came about after years and years of selective breeding between wild cabbage plants and started around the 6th century BC, in fact. The word broccoli comes from the Italian for the flowering crest of a cabbage. Well, what about that? Bowler hats were originally invented as safety hats. Bowler hats were designed by London hatters Thomas and William Bowler, hence the name. The hat was invented to keep horse riders' heads safe from branches and other obstacles. Armadillos have shells so hard they can deflect a bullet. One poor Texan man learned this the hard way when he shot at an armadillo only to have the bullet ricochet off the indestructible beast and back at him into his jaw. The man was airlifted to hospital and amazingly, the armadillo just walked off unscathed. There is a spacecraft graveyard in the South Pacific Ocean known as Point Nemo. It's the furthest place on Earth from land. It's the home to over 300 spacecraft and associated space debris, including the MIR space station, the first ever object assembled in planetary orbit by the Russian cosmonauts. And sea urchins have just 5 teeth. Sea urchins are omnivores and have 5 teeth, which are held together in the centre of its body. Each tooth has its own jaw to keep it in place. This means it's able to move more freely, and they also have a tongue-like structure alongside them, which gives them a beak-like mouth. Urchins mostly feed on algae found on rocks or corals, as well as any debris or decomposing matter from fish or sea creatures, and can live up to 200 years in the wild. And while we're on the subject of sea creatures, a baby octopus is about the size of a flea when it's born. When an octopus lays its eggs, they are smaller than a grain of rice. When the baby octopuses emerge from their eggs, they come out fully formed, but tiny. You would think this would make them hard to spot. However, since their eggs are laid by the tens of thousands, they are easily spotted. Well, there you go for this week, folks, and a proper mix-mash of things it is to mull over. So I'll sign off for now. Have a good week. Bye for now. Ta-ra!
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead will be dry and settled with temperatures hovering around 15 degrees, the average for this time of year. UV levels are expected moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 6:05 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:12 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 16th of April through to Sunday 18th, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. On Monday 19th of April, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. And on Tuesday 20th of April through to Thursday 22nd of April, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update. And now it's time for another edition of Sounds of Nature, which this week is presented by Mina.
One of our most familiar mammals are the grey squirrel. They can be found in woods, gardens and parks across town and country and tend to be very tame. It is a frequent visitor to gardens that have bird tables and feeders. Grey squirrels feast on hazelnuts, by cracking the shell in half. You may also find pine cones that have been nibbled, leaving what looks like an apple core behind. Grey squirrels make a rough nest called a dray, out of twigs, leaves and strips of bark in the fork of a branch, high up in the tree canopy. Females may have two litters of 3 to 4 young a year.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Thank you, Mina. And now it's time for the local sports news. Adama Traore's stoppage time thunderbolt saw Wolves remarkably get back to winning ways despite an underwhelming display at lowly Fulham. It was a drab game, and on the whole, an absurd call from a video assistant referee David Coote, deeming Daniel Pedence's shoulder to be in an offside position before crossing the ball to Jose, looked all set to be the major talking point. The flaws of the technology and its handling of offside decisions were certainly thrust into the spotlight once more. Add to the fact that Pedro Neto limped off with an early injury, and Wolves were about to reflect on another disappointing night in what has been a challenging campaign. Thankfully, though, Traore came up with a true moment of magic. It is not something we have seen enough of him over the course of 2020-21, of course, but he was a clear example of the Spaniard at his devastating best. The fact that Fabio Silva, again having an impact off the bench, got the assist is worth noting as well. Traore, however, deserves enormous praise for, despite going 49 league games without scoring, having the belief to take the shot on and executing it to absolute perfection. Wolves' performance was far from perfect, and there are a lot of things that they need to still work on. They're certainly not creating enough clear-cut opportunities, but fans can head into the weekend with a smile on their face, thanks to the work of Traore right at the end. Wolves next face Sheffield United at Molineux in a fixture whose start time has been pushed back to 8:15 p.m, as fixtures around the country are modified as to avoid clashing with the funeral of Prince Philip. Albion produced a fantastic display to thrash Southampton and keep alive their faint hopes of staying in the Premier League. The Baggies welcomed Ralph Hasenhüttl's side to the Hawthorns, having put 5 past Chelsea in their previous outing. And they should have scored as many against the Saints, following a rampant first-half display that saw them create a host of clear-cut chances. In the end, they had to settle for just 3 goals, with Matthias Pereira, Matt Phillips and Callum Robinson the men on target. But it could easily have been more, with Diagne hugely unfortunate to see a goal ruled out by VAR when the cameras were unable to determine whether his upper body was onside or offside. Thankfully, it didn't matter, with the Baggies going on to register their biggest home win in the top flight since November 2016. The result means they now sit 8 points from safety in the Premier League with 7 games remaining. The Baggies now have a long wait for their next fixture, with their game against opponents Leicester being put back to Thursday the 22nd of April due to their opponents making it to the semi-final of the FA Cup. Now we head over to Mina, who has for us the answers for this week's quiz. Well, at least I hope she does. Do you have the answers for us, Mina?
I do. So here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How high is the Burj Khalifa? The answer, 2,722 feet. Question 2. Which country does the word broccoli come from? And the answer here is Italy. Question 3. What were bowler hats invented as? The answer, safety hats. Question 4. Which animal is considered to be bulletproof? And the answer here is the armadillo. Question 5. How many teeth do sea urchins have? The answer here is 5. And finally, question 6. How big is a baby octopus when it's born? And the answer, the size of a flea. How did you do? Great, I hoped. But if not, don't worry, there's always another chance next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. Nightmarishly convincing. After reading it, nothing seems quite the same anymore. Thus was the verdict of the Sunday Times, splashed large on the front cover of A Blueprint for Survival, first published in 1972 in The Ecologist, and then as a book in 1973, that went on to sell over 750,000 copies. Written by Edward Goldsmith and Robert Allen, and signed by over 30 of the leading scientists of the day, including Sir Julian Huxley, Sir Frank Fraser-Darling, Sir Peter Medawar, and Sir Peter Scott, Blueprint argued for a radically restructured civilization in order to prevent the breakdown of society and the irreversible disruption of the life support systems on this planet. I recall in particular the stark assertion that if mankind didn't mend his ways, then we would surely and certainly muddle our way to extinction. We haven't yet, of course, which is perhaps in part why Blueprint and other similar tomes have since been pushed gently towards the back burner. Until now, when the dramatic events of recent years have insisted we reassess our habitation of planet Earth and our impact on its ailing health. Around the time I read Blueprint, as a student in the early 1970s, a science lecturer cited it, postulating that when mankind did surely and certainly muddle its way to extinction, then the next most likely dominant species on the planet would be insects. His reasoning is intriguing, but does hold water. The fundamental cycle of life is to be born, mature, procreate, and die. Everything else is ancillary. Insects can be found at all extremes, and are incredibly resilient. Cockroaches are believed to have survived the Hiroshima blast of 1945 at just 1,000 feet from the detonation point. Now let us consider our own modest ability to cope. Above 30 degrees centigrade and we begin to wilt. Minus 10 degrees centigrade and we huddle in layers of clothes. Yes, there are those hardy souls living happily around the globe in punishing conditions, but by and large, most of us have a puny tolerance range of around 40 degrees centigrade from top to bottom, and after a short while, even those limits may become unendurable. Weather is what happens over the next week. Climate is what happens over the next millennium. So are the recent fluctuations in our weather. Heavy snow, unprecedented flooding, searing heat waves, unpredictable rainfall patterns, any indicator of a change in climate. That is, of course, part of the contemporary debate between those who hold that man is already well down a self-made path to extinction, standing toe-to-toe against the climate change deniers. Yet one fact universally beyond dispute, universal except perhaps to the likes of the Flat Earth Society, is how our climate has swung radically in the past. It is only within 10,000 years that we have emerged from our last ice age. Indeed, there are those who suggest that in parts of Scotland, it is not yet entirely gone. To put the era into context, and this is a crude approximation, but it does the trick. If every word in Tolstoy's War and Peace, that's well over 500,000, each represents 10,000 years since the creation of our planet, then humankind's entire span on it to date would occupy little more than the final few characters and full stop at the end of the concluding chapter. 10,000 years in geomorphology terms is a mere blink, and although of course none of us here now will be around to bear witness to our species surviving the next blink, we must factor this into our deliberations on the timescale of change. All the more remarkable that our weather, if not our climate, seems to have altered so dramatically within less than a lifetime. Should global warming herald a new ice age for the UK and Europe, which sounds perversely illogical but is in fact a real possibility if the warming disrupts ocean currents, then the lessons of history may offer some indication as to what to expect. There have been several ice ages over the previous 600 million years, the final one occurring about 1 million years back and lasting until about 10,000 years ago. Much of the landscape of the UK has been fashioned by ice. The River Severn, rising in the Welsh mountains of Plinlimmon and heading northwards, had its course radically diverted southwards around Shrewsbury by the effects of the retreating glaciers, resulting in it carving the route that we see today through Ironbridge Gorge. More subtle is the effect of freezing ice extending finger-like and meltwater pushing against the substrate, each with a force capable of moving large boulders. This can distort the geological interpretation of an area by depositing material miles from its source in a phenomenon that geologists call glacial erratics. The last ice age saw the glacial sheet extending in a line roughly from Bridgnorth through the Black Country to Warsaw before it swung northwards, thus largely missing Birmingham. Yet the city did not escape erratics. A large boulder in Cannonhill Park, deposited around 18,000 years ago and colloquially known as the Moon Rock or the Meteor, is believed to originate from the Arenig Mountains of Wales, over 100 miles to the northwest of the Barn in Snowdonia. Several species of animals succumbed to the Ice Age and became extinct. One such was the woolly mammoth. Standing at over 12 feet, or 4 metres if you must, it had the appearance of a hirsute elephant. In 1986, the remains of an adult woolly mammoth, Manunthanus primigenius, were discovered at Condover, south of Shrewsbury. Further excavations over 1987-1988 reveal the skeletons of 3 juveniles. Closer to the Black Country, the website of Amblecote History Society carries a report from January 1917 of mammalian remains, including small fragments from a woolly mammoth, found in sand pits at Amblecote. The findings indicated large quantities of the materials in which they were embedded might have come from the higher regions of the Stour, but associated with them is an Arenig glacial boulder, which must have come from the Arenig Mountains of Wales. The whereabouts of the fragments are currently unknown, though it is possible to see how an intact woolly mammoth would have appeared, courtesy of a realistic, stuffed, full-size version, affectionately known as Fluffy. A popular attraction at the former Dudley Museum, the poor creature has been housed in temporary accommodation since the museum's closure in 2016. But help is at hand for Fluffy, whose new home is Worcester City Art Gallery and Museum, and where visitors may again appreciate these behemoths of the distant past. We can but hope that this time around, the weather in Worcester remains conducive to Fluffy's continuing well-being for some blinks to come. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe. Ta-ra!